Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not filmed in front of a live studio audience. Welcome to season 11.
11.
The final season.
Yeah, that came around quickly.
Well, I imagine it's been a lot of hard work.
Oh, yeah.
And it's taken up a lot of time, but what a pleasurable time.
Yeah, it has. We, just the other month, actually, a couple of months ago, was the 5th anniversary of when our first episode went up. So, yeah, it's been half a decade, which is sizable.
Isn't it just? That's incredible.
Yeah. I'm not going to put that into a percentage of either of our lives, because I think we'll find that a bit depressing. But there you go.
Especially for me.
But either way, it has been a good time. And yeah, we've enjoyed it. And we're looking forward to this final season. See how this one goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm intrigued as to the ending of the season, because as much as I've watched Cheers throughout my lifetime, I've never watched the ending, as far as I'm aware.
Had you deliberately avoided the ending?
No. It's just because I've mainly watched the episodes as they appear. I've never seen the last episode, or if I have, I don't remember it.
Well, there you go.
So there's a little bit of excitement in the air for what's to come.
This episode, season 11, episode 1, The Little Match Girl, it aired on September 24th, 1992. It was directed by James Burrows and written by Dan Staley and Rob Long. It's an interesting one to kickstart the season, and we'll get into why. I think it was a strange plot to start the season with.
It was, and it could just have easily been an end-of-season episode, especially given what happened and the gap between episode 1 and episode 2, which we'll come to later.
Yeah. Do you think there was some reshuffling of episodes behind the scenes?
Possibly. Yeah, that could be true. Maybe they felt that the wedding was a better way to go out of season 10.
Speaking of wedding, segue. Norman Cliff are recapping the wedding in the cold open.
They are. They're driving back from the wedding, which surprises me, because that suggests that Norm, who's in the driver's seat, didn't drink at the wedding, which I find highly unlikely. So maybe this is just a more relaxed view of driving laws in an age gone by.
Cheers is an odd one where it comes to driving laws, because at times they have promoted through dialogue and actions of characters the designated driver program. And then there's other times where you go, they've definitely been drinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose if they don't mention it, it's left to the viewer to assume. It's not like Norm is clearly drunk. In fact, he's acting quite sober. But we know that Norm doesn't go anywhere without drinking.
We know Norm is a raging alcoholic.
Yeah. So Norm and Cliff are driving back from the wedding, discussing the main talking points of the wedding. Norm suggests that they drop in at Cheers at 2 in the morning for a couple of beers.
Because it's only 2 in the morning.
Mm.
Yeah.
What time is Cheers open till?
3. A safe 3. I had a very similar experience with Troy the other evening, where we went to a pub quiz and pub closed. We finished our drinks. It was 12, and it was us two and one of our friends. We went, Troy, could go for another drink. And maybe. And I went, don't know what is open now. And he went, I know a casino. So yes, what that one drink was more than one in the end. I'd say closer to 4 or 5, but rum and cokes, you know, to keep it civil.
Oh yeah. Well, that's a casino drink, isn't it?
Yeah. Hello. I'll have a pint of Stella. Do you have any pork scratchings?
Oh, I wonder if you could gamble pork scratchings, put them all on black, double your scratchings.
Can you gamble chocolate coins because it's got the monarch's face on?
Do they have the monarch's face on? I'm not sure I've ever seen royally accurate chocolate coins.
Then you haven't lived, my friend. But yeah, no, it is 2 a.m. Norm suggests going back into Cheers for one. Cliff asks if Vera will mind, and Norm goes, no. And why is the reason for that, Bang?
Well, it turns out that Vera was at the wedding and she's had quite a few drinks. And the suggestion is that she'll be out like a light and they can just go and enjoy themselves. The little bit that's revealed is that she's currently in the back seat.
But don't worry, Norm's a good husband. He'll crack a window open for her.
Yeah, like she's a dog.
Yeah, in Boston in 1992.
Yeah. And I do like the way that that's Cliff's reaction to that is, oh, aren't you good?
They are a nonsensical pair, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. But what a pair. And we've enjoyed them thoroughly over the years.
And then we get into the rest of the episode and it continues this exchange because they go into cheers.
So it's late at night. People are starting to think about going home. Starts with Carla actually leaving, still in wedding gear. Norm and Cliff have obviously had their beer and they're going home too. And Cliff decides to defer his mail round until the next day and chucks his mailbag over the bar, which shows how comfortable they are in the bar now that he decides that it's okay to dump his stuff there.
Yeah, it depends on what it is. When I worked in a bar, people would give us their car keys and go, I don't want these, basically. I'm giving you this, so I don't get... Depending who was behind the bar, they'll either accept them and go, all right, but I finish at 10. So wherever they're hidden, you're not getting them back tonight. Or go, it's not my responsibility whether you choose to drive or not.
So do you think that Cliff was worried about drunkenly completing his mail round?
He asked Norm to complete it for him.
He did.
Out of... Because they both have had a drink, I think just laziness.
Yeah. Well, in the end, the bag gets slung behind the bar and off they go.
I'd like to see drunk Cliff doing a mail round. I think it would be like Paperboy.
Which, having played Paperboy recently, is one of the hardest games I've ever played.
I liked it when you were cycling away from the Grim Reaper and you had to make his little feet pedal as fast as possible. Or you just threw newspapers in Death's face.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
Secret to an old life.
Rebecca is smoking her troubles away.
Isn't she? Yeah, a wedding always makes her think about life and what she's achieved, and she's not very happy with her lot.
No.
But Sam does a good job of turning around, and she determines to change things, starting with the very cigarette that's in her hand.
She vows that it will be her last cigarette as a symbol of change.
Yeah, but what a cigarette, James.
It really... obligatory pun.
Brought the house down, were you going to say?
Yeah, 11 seasons in, you just go... You did... Yeah. I can't beat it. Bought the house down. She puts it in the trash as a statement.
Yes. She says, I'm not making any mistakes again. So it's pretty well set up what's going to happen here.
Yep.
So the next morning, we are introduced to a new set.
It's a bit charcoal-y.
Mm. Yeah, definitely a different look for the bar.
It's gothic chic.
Yeah, but I was impressed. I mean, you've got this set that's been there. I assume they had a separate set they built somewhere. I can't imagine they, unless that between series they pull it down and put it up again, or I don't know.
Unless they were told months in advance, your season 11 episode is going to be this. Great. Can we film some of it before and then burn the place?
Yeah. Yeah, they went out on a high. But I was genuinely impressed with the set that was a burnt-out bar, or at least one half of it.
Yeah, I am interested how they did it, because they would have had to have two sets, wouldn't they? Burnt and classic.
Mm. This was all... The Cheers set was all on a soundstage, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With the audience back. So it wouldn't have been the easiest thing to...
It was huge as
shift
well.
...shift all that. Yeah. So you've got to think they just...
Well,
did
it was on swinging platforms. So whenever they shot things in the office scene, parts of the bar could swing away so that you could open up the thing like a doll's house and see into the office.
Oh, so potentially they could have just had a separate thing that they swung in.
Yeah.
Particularly as it was half the bar that was gone. So maybe that was a decision that they would swing in a new half a bar.
It's intriguing.
So we've got the staff arriving at the bar the next morning, and... First in the room is Sam, I believe.
Yeah, he's delirious at first, thinking it's one of Gary's classic pranks.
Mm, and what a prank that would have been.
Arson.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, oh yes, wait a minute. Oh, thank God. Woo! Oh, this is great. This is really good.
I'm sorry?
Gary, you know, from Gary's Old Town Tavern. Oh, we're always doing pranks like this. You know, first he makes the bar look like it burned down, and then he gets you guys to go along with it. You are very good. Woo! Come on, lighten up, will you? Come on, Gary! Come on out! Hey, you know, time to push the button. Make everything go back together again, Gary! Gary! Not Gary, is it?
It shows how desperate he is for this not to be happening. We know just how much the bar means to him. We've seen that in the past. And this would be one heck of a blow.
What I liked about this, it's a bit of a sitcom cliche, is he realizes it isn't Gary, and then we cue sad music.
Yeah, the music follows him rather than...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, next in is Carla, who suggests, in a weird sort of way, she almost forces an accusation out of Sam, doesn't she?
Just wish I knew how it started.
Hold it right there. What are you saying, Sammy? That a Tortelli kid would torch his mother's place of business just for spite?
No, I'd never think that.
Why not? It's plausible.
I think Anthony could have done it easily.
Yeah, yeah. Any one of them, we've seen them in action.
I'm sure they've set things alight before.
Oh, even I've set things alight as a kid, and I was a good boy.
What's the largest thing I've set alight?
Your Honour.
I haven't set this alight, but in Glasgow, I saw a plastic bin or trash box attached to a lamppost, and I saw that melting and then drop away. Because someone had done something similar to what Rebecca had done, no doubt.
Hmm.
Yeah, which was quite eldritch, you could say.
Yeah, I've certainly seen a lot of bins set on fire deliberately as well.
Take that, trash.
Yeah. I used to go down the woods with friends and we'd make a little fire, just a bonfire for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But we were also in the vicinity of a kind of a home for kids who'd done bad things.
Oh, juvie.
Juvie, yeah. And every so often one of them would turn up almost pre-prepared for this fire. And one of them turned up with a bag full of aerosol cans, like a bin bag full of aerosol cans, as if, you know, oh, you've got a fire. I wonder what we can do here.
Aerosols.
We just scarpered and heard a few pops in the background.
I think we've all set body hair alight by accident while cooking.
Yeah, I have to be careful, though, because... I think you're in a similar position, James, that ultimately I'm closer to a grizzly bear than I am to most humans.
Oh, yeah. There was a picture taken of my hand recently at work, and someone else at work went, well, how'd you get those Teen Wolf photos? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not entirely inaccurate.
No, and that scene in Teen Wolf in the bathroom is such... It's such a brilliant sort of parody of the teenager coming to age. It's so good.
It's just a great film. The fact that it takes, as you say, a lot of teen comedy tropes and just goes, but what if werewolf?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very good.
Norm arrives and he's crying because his, I was going to say second home. I think he spends more time at Cheers than actual home. One of his homes has burnt down.
Yeah, all the humanity, he cries.
Which is related to another thing which caught alight.
A human? I wasn't aware anyone got burned.
Yes, some humans, more so an airborne object.
You've really got me there.
The Hindenburg.
Oh, yes, okay.
The radio announcement for the Hindenburg, where the radio announcer was describing it, is where the phrase, in terms of how it entered popular culture, oh, the humanity, came from.
Really?
Yeah.
So that was that someone on the Hindenburg?
No, that was
that the radio describing?
The radio broadcaster describing the events he was witnessing, yeah.
I was going to say, because it's not a phrase you would utter in panic, I don't imagine.
I once sent a message to someone, something along the lines of, as I lay here in the twilight hour, my stomach laden with cheese and fermented grape, I have to look back at my choices. And though I may regret some of them, I have lived. And Troy went, what? And went, I had a pasta bacon, some sherry, Troy. And
you truly have lived. You know how to spoil yourself, James.
Yeah, I don't think people would say that as they were facing imminent death. As I look back on my choices, I regret some, but I have lived.
Yeah, I think given the length of the statement, you can take the word imminent out of the equation. If you can get that whole thing out, then you're not in immediate danger.
Grim Reaper's there tapping his watch. Norm is crying, but he recovers quickly and says he'll be over at Gary's for the next few days.
Yes, so he's found a solution to his short-term problem of where to get a beer.
Yeah.
Then we have Rebecca arrives, as shocked as anyone else at this stage. Mm-hmm. John Allen Hill comes down from upstairs, from Melville's, with a brilliant line.
Well, Sam, I see you monkeys have discovered fire. Would you like to come upstairs and see the damage at Melville's?
His cutting language is just on point. I love it.
Yeah, I love how some of the things he comes up with to insult Carl are brilliant.
Yeah. So he invites Sam and Rebecca upstairs to see the damage at Melville's, which...
I imagine would be smoke damage at most.
Yeah. Which Sam sees as a bright point in all this.
And I'm glad we can refer to them as this. The Boyds enter.
Yes, the Boyds come back from the wedding. They're about to go on the honeymoon, aren't they?
Yes.
They feign sympathy, I think. Well, Woody gets initially upset because of it's his bar, but gets excited by the idea of the pool table being fused to the ground from the heat.
That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, yeah. I have certainly something I haven't seen.
Playing game of pool, though, would be terrible because I imagine there'd be a bit of a lean.
And not if it fused perfectly. I mean, it could solve any future issues of leaning. It could be the perfect pool table.
A bit of arson.
That's all you need. Next time I'm down my local and the pool table's not behaving.
Let me just melt the other legs.
Yeah, I know what to do.
Not MacGyver it with a placemat. Yeah. Cliff enters and immediately runs to his mailbag. He's the one person who I think is actually, and it's a weird thing to say about Cliff, but he's actually thinking about next steps, isn't he?
Yes.
Everyone else just goes, oh, I don't know what to do. I'll clean. Cliff goes, I need to do something.
Yeah, well, his mailbag is destroyed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which prompts him to think about staging a jeep accident to re-destroy it so that he's not in trouble, I guess.
Woody comes back from the pool room and he gives a little exchange here.
Could have been like that fire my great-grandmother's cow started. Darn thing kicked over a lantern, burned an entire city to the ground. Yep, shame was so great, family had to move to Ohio and change their last name to Wilkins.
Woody, you're from Indiana and your family name is Boyd.
Oh, well, some stuff happened in Ohio.
Come on, Woody, we've got to get to the airport.
This is, I assume, something that some people who know American history would know, but for us it's just a funny Woody line. What he's alluding to is Mrs. O'Leary of Chicago, whose cow kicked over a lantern and caused the Great Fire of 1871.
Oh, wow. Okay.
A lot of historical references in this episode. At least two.
Well, we have the Great Fire of London, don't we?
Which is when a rat kicked over a matchbox.
Yeah. We don't do things at scale in the UK.
And it's set fire to the whole of London as many a rat's rampaged all aflame.
Is there a story for how that began?
I assume it was due to some mill or factory.
Yeah, I've got it. For some reason, I've got a bakery in my head.
That sounds right, doesn't it? Where there's a catalyst or some agent which caused more fire than there should have been.
Oh, I'd love that if that was the statement on the insurance documents.
Like when you're baking, you want a bit of fire. That's me at every barbecue. This one's a bit crunchy, this burger ramen. There was more fire than there should have been.
So we can see the results of the more fire than there should have been all around the bar. Rebecca finally gets the information about how the fire started.
Well, I discovered the cause of the fire. Same old story. Some idiot tosses a cigarette into a trash can, the whole thing goes up.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I've seen it 100 times. When are people going to learn? Are you all right?
I'm fine.
The thing that Kirstie Alley is brilliant at is this sort of immediate, over-the-top emotions, isn't she? And she does this hyperventilating so well. You can just see it welling up in her. And Frasier overhears this conversation and begs Rebecca to tell Sam that it was her cigarette that caused the trouble.
I get the state of panic. Shortly before we were recording, I accidentally made a small fire, but I simply told the fire to go away. It did.
Yeah, that's our advice to all listeners out there. Discard your fire extinguishers at home. You simply need the power of will.
Fire respects authority.
Please write in with your results from this advice.
Rebecca walks over to Sam as if to tell him about the cause of the fire, and she instead blames the faulty wiring.
Yeah, and unbeknown to her, the wiring is something Sam's been meaning to fix for a long time, and so takes that blame straight back onto himself.
Just a shame.
Yeah, she really picked the wrong thing to say there, or the right thing, depending on your view. She certainly got herself out of it.
Him and Rebecca then hug and cry together.
Well, hyperventilate together. And yes, so Norm and Cliff are now sweeping the floor. They're all chipping in. Norm pretends like he's there altruistically, but actually it's because Gary's bar wouldn't open a tab for them.
Mm-hmm. Cliff has a plaster on his head because of his supposed Jeep accident.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a man of his word. He went through with it.
It reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen Mongrels, the TV show.
I don't think I have.
It's similar to Avenue Q in that it's a puppet thing, but it's about stray animals in London. And there's one who's a Persian cat, and he's voiced like Omar Dijalili, who's an Iranian comedian here in the UK, because he's a Persian cat. And at one point, he's trying to protest bonfire night, and he shows up to a house. And I won't do the accent because it would sound offensive, but in a thick Iranian accent, he shows up wearing a hard hat, which just has in badly written biro, gas man. And he goes, "Hello, I am a gas man, as you can clearly see from my hat."
A uniform will get you a long way.
That's what it reminded me. Cliff goes, "I was in an accident, as you can clearly see from this plaster."
Yeah, I think definitely this is slightly unrelated, but one of my friends used to say, if you're going to be a criminal and with the intention of getting up to no good, ladies and gentlemen, no good, he would dress as smartly as possible so that no one would suspect him, which is fairly obvious. I like the idea of going the other way and dressing as a very obvious robber in stripes and with a swag bag, because equally no one would suspect you.
Yeah, there's actually a study in that those who dress less fancifully would be less suspected because people don't pay them as much attention. People subconsciously, they recognize that as more common, both societally and in terms of frequency. Case in point being how Lee Harvey Oswald was able to get into the Texas Book Depository wearing a boiler suit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's my friend's theory out the window. So just fade into the background is your advice.
Yeah. Speaking of nice casual wear, Frasier has a denim shirt and sporting a designer beard. And I think this look really works for him.
This sounds like morning daytime TV now.
Frasier is walking in wearing a denim shirt, but I call him Rugged Frasier in this appearance.
He does look rugged. And it struck me how old our cast is looking now. In particular, Sam and Frasier. You can really see the years on them now as compared to when we started this.
Yeah, because they are early 40s in this season, yeah, which means they'd be early 30s at the start.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The same age as me. And yeah. I would have pegged them for much older.
Well, it's a different time.
Yeah, I obviously eat well and, you know, look after myself.
There was something which said, it was a picture from, I think, season one. And it said, it was a picture of Norman Cliff. And it went, these two are 31 and 32, respectively, in the first season. And people went, what? You look at another TV show from that era and compare it to a modern show where the characters are the same age, but in terms of both appearance and societal attitude, let's compare, it's going to be a TED talk now, but let's compare the Golden Girls, right, and the Sex and the City sequel, and just like that, the main cast of each shows are the same age, but the social attitudes surrounding them, both from audience of the show and within the show, vastly different, because the Golden Girls are seen as post-retirement, living in a retirement home, because that's where they should be, according to the belief of the show. But Sex and the City 2, we'll call it, you know, you just go, yeah, no, they're, it's embracing a second stage of life, you know, in terms of 40 is the new 20 type ideal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly my mum embodies this. She is a much younger, active woman than many others the same age. In fact, my partner's gran, even more so, and she's in her mid-80s and she's, you know, flies around wearing trendy clothes and doing Zumba and things like that. She's incredible.
Well, yeah, and that just goes to show how, one, societal attitudes can be very much based on the observer point of view as opposed to the individual, and also how over time the expectations on people of a certain age changes.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's this strange age we're coming into where my gran was sort of a survivor of the war. She, you know, when she was younger, the entertainment was what you call slow dancing with a big band playing in the room. Everything was all very civilized, and they still had that sort of very much more of a sense of manners, community,
propriety.
Yeah, things like that. Yeah. And soon you're going to get grandparents who were raving on drugs, you know, in the 80s. And that concept of a what a grandparent might be is changing.
Think about it. In the UK, a grandparent could be born in 1991, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Weird. Time. Sam won't get any help from the insurance company.
No. He's didn't listen when they read in the insurance rules or the terms.
25K deductible.
We call it an excess, don't we, over here?
Something.
Yeah, so that I think he has to pay the first 25,000. Is that right?
Oof, that's a lot.
Yeah, a stupid amount. But we don't know how much damage was done to the place. But I imagine in those days, 25,000, depending on structural damage, if there wasn't any, probably go a long way to solving the problem.
Fraser takes out a checkbook and writes a more than adequate yet undisclosed amount for Sam, which is nice.
Yeah.
But a completely theoretical gesture.
Yeah. Reliant on Lilith's cooperation, which we all know would never happen. I mean, Fraser has in the past done things for the bar, placed bets or other such things, and deliberately kept it away from her, knowing that it wouldn't go down well.
No, it would not. So Sam goes to the banks, plural.
Yes, we see him in the final bank, where he's getting well and truly rejected, quite sarcastically rejected.
Bad customer service.
Yeah, from the happy bank, as he describes them.
Might be the happy bank, but there's a difference between happy and friendly. Someone can very happily insult you.
This is true. Meanwhile, Rebecca is still mulling over her dilemma. Does she tell Sam or does she not? And it's obviously tearing her up a bit inside.
And Sam returns. Loneless is the word I've used.
Loneless?
Lacking alone.
Which also sounds like quite a tragic word as well.
Loneless.
Yeah, it sounds quite sad, really, as a term.
I've just got Tiffany's I Think We're Alone Now in my head now. Anyway. He plans to...
Yeah.
Anyway, Sam
playing just as fast as we can.
Holding on to one another, trying to get away. Anyway, Sam plans to cash out his pension, max out his credit cards, and move into a cheaper apartment.
I think we're alone now. And this could go on all episode. The cracking song.
It is. Very catchy. Very catchy.
Sam is desperately looking for any way to raise the money to solve this situation. What's his ultimate move that he doesn't want to do?
Selling the vet.
Oh, dear. He's even lined up someone to sell the vet to.
Kirby.
Yeah. Kirby, his neighbour, who arrives and hands Sam the check.
And the paperwork.
Yeah. And Sam tries to hand over the keys, but he just can't do it.
Interestingly, in the US, car insurance is on the driver, not the car. So any driver can drive any car as long as they have the owner's permission.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't really have an opinion on which
it's just an interesting difference, yeah.
It is an interesting difference, but I wonder if you have an extraordinarily fast car, I wonder what the insurers think in each country. Certainly something to think of. In this country, car insurance is pretty pointless. It will protect you in a serious accident, but because it's so expensive and becomes wildly more expensive if you're in an accident, even if it wasn't your fault. Well, everyone tries to avoid mentioning it. So you have people who get into crashes and they try and solve it themselves, because to tell the car insurance company would mean that you're almost paying more than you would have saved by getting the insurance.
Going off the books, taking it to the garage, going, can you fix this? And they go, your back two wheels are missing.
Yeah, yeah. Or like Herbie.
Yeah. But in America, they just exchange insurance info. And again, this is just based on what I've seen in the media and what I've been told by people. So listeners, feel free to clarify what I've said if I've been mistaken.
Oh, we love a correction. Oh, send in your corrections.
Send in your corrections. We'll go, the delicious multicultural corrections.
Oh, dear.
But yeah, no, Sam, Kirby gives him the pink slip. Sam reluctantly gives the keys.
Reluctantly, putting it mildly, rugby tackles him to the floor to get him back at one point.
But Sam comes up with a genius idea.
Yes, he's going to think of his own wild money-making scheme, a new product.
Invent something that America needs.
Like the toilet duck.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting story. Cliff actually came up with the toilet duck, didn't he?
Came up with something very similar to the toilet duck.
The toilet goat.
Yes.
I see no problem with that. It's not as appealing as a duck.
No. Toilet cat. Because cats love drinking from the toilet. That's their thing.
That's true.
Yeah. Toilet flamingo. Now we're talking.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the dipping of the neck.
Yeah. And a curved beak as well.
I'll tell you what. That's what America needs.
Yeah, we've just solved it right now.
Come on, Sam. Up
your
game.
We don't even have a bar to pay for. We could be millionaires.
Up your game, Sam. It's like the whole caterpillar clash in UK supermarkets.
Yeah, we have a cake called Colin the Caterpillar, which a more upmarket supermarket makes. And it's very tasty.
Just chocolate in a bowl. It's chocolate sponge, chocolate ganache.
Well, you say that. The one I had, and I don't know if it was a special edition or whether this is all of them, was salted.
Oh, my.
Which, you know, you add salt to any confectionery, instantly it's upmarket. That's the thing now.
Caramel, salt that bad boy.
Yeah. And it was very good. Very good. I had it for my birthday. But there's a few knockoffs, aren't there?
Well, yeah. And this is where... this is where the troubles began, in that another supermarket came up with a caterpillar cake. Same design, but they just gave it a different name, like Kirby the Caterpillar.
Yeah.
And the lawsuits, Barry. I remember going, yeah, you can't copyright a caterpillar cake.
Well, and you're right, because that knockoff version in the lower-end supermarket still exists.
Yep.
I see it every time I go shopping, so they won.
Rebecca breaks down crying and does tell Sam the truth, because he through tears, said that he will be living with his mistake of not updating the wiring for the rest of his life.
And Sam actually is quite mean. I mean, even Frasier says it, that it's the dark side of Sam.
You did this? You did this to me? Yes, yes, of course. Why didn't I figure this out earlier? My bar burns down, you're within 50 miles, it all fits.
Sam, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, what were you thinking? Huh? You tired of screwing up your own life? You start to pick on mine? You know, of all the stupid things you've done in your useless life, this is your masterpiece. I'll tell you what. Get out of my bar.
Everything he says, Rebecca has said about herself at some point, but because of that, it's definitely Sam digging into her deepest fears and anxieties.
Yeah. And you can tell it hurts. And she goes. We pretty immediately come to nighttime at the bar. Everything's closed up. And Rebecca comes in the dark and tries to leave a envelope on the bar.
Could the envelope contain the cast list for this episode?
In this case, maybe it does. Do you have it there, James?
I do. Jackie Swanson as Kelly Boyd, Keen Curtis as John Allen Hill, Robert McCrae as Fire Marshal Dobbins. He previously appeared in Season 9, Episode 21, Cheers Has Chili. Amanda Carlin as Miss Curland, the loan manager at the bank. She also appeared in Wings, Law & Order, LA Law, Murphy Brown, The George Carlin Show, Deep Space Nine, Something Wilder, The Nanny, Sybil, Liar Liar, Party of Five, Ally McBeal, ER, Third Rock from the Sun, Friends, The West Wing, 6 Feet Under, Grace and Frankie, and many more. She is also the daughter of Francis Sternhagen, which is fun. Francis Sternhagen, of course, plays Ma Clavin. Peter Kelligan as Kirby. He previously appeared in Season 10, Episode 22, Rebecca's Lover, Nut, as one of the members of Sam's Lost Car support group. So it's nice that he's made a return. Peter Kavoyan as Fireman. He also appeared in McMillan and Wife, The Stockard Channing Show, LA Law, Doogie Howser MD, ER, Becker, and more. But she has something else in the envelope, doesn't she?
A lit cigarette.
Take that, Sam.
Oh, that would be a nice little cherry on top, wouldn't it? Yes, so she has emptied her life savings, left it for Sam. And Sam is actually in the bar, so he catches her and she tells him and then says, you won't see me again. And off she goes. And Sam tries to stop her and...
she gives truthful words.
Go back and wait.
Sam, look, you and I don't have anything to say to each other. You said some things today that you cannot take back and you really hurt me. And I know that what I did was terrible. But what you did was worse because you did it on purpose. I don't want to ever see you or this bar again.
And I think she's right to do that. And possibly deliberately, the emotion of that strong statement that she says to Sam, essentially saying that, you know, yes, I made mistakes, but you hurt me and you meant it, is quickly dissolved to bring it back to comedy when Sam says, do you want your job back? And she, another Kirstie Alley shift of emotions. She bursts into sort of happy tears, or begging tears, I should say.
Do you want your job back?
I really do.
Essentially, he's offered her a job back and everything's back to normal. He offers her a lift home, which quickly turns to a walk her home because he forgets about his car. And Rebecca asks why he's forgiven her so quickly.
There's a heartfelt moment where he says that a few years back, he'd crashed his boat and needed a job and she gave him a break. So he owed her. But now they're even.
Yeah, which is nice. That's been a long time coming, I think.
Yeah. I like how when they hugged, there was a big applause from the audience as well.
Mm.
Do we think that because Shelley Long was a main cast for 5 seasons and then season 6 started, do we think this act of Sam extending the olive branch to Rebecca was meant to be the starting act of the next 5-season block, if that makes sense?
Well, we are in the last season, so I wonder if they just wanted to reach parity with that.
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. How does our episode finish, James?
They go out for pizza.
They do. And not having any money, Rebecca says you can use my life savings to pay for it.
Should just about cover it.
Yeah, Sam's last line is nice, isn't it? Should just about cover it. And the episode ends.
Yep.
And I enjoyed that, I have to say. Trivia time. Is it really? I'm surprised that we still have any mail at all.
I mean, I've got some ashy scraps here, which I can form into questions.
Well, do your best, James.
But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
Who wrote the fairy tale, The Little Match Girl?
Oh, well, that's alluding to the title of this episode. I don't know.
Hans Christian Andersen.
Ah, well, I probably should have made a guess, shouldn't I?
Nah.
Oh, well, I won't regret it. When Woody tells a story, as you've suggested earlier, about the cow kicking over the lantern, in that story, where did the family relocate to first? And what did they change their name to?
Ohio is where they moved to. And it was a fairly common name, I think. Wilkins or Jones or something.
I will have to take your first answer, and you were right. Well done. That is 2 points divided by two.
Nice. This is a bit of a high school chemistry question for you.
Ooh.
Because, you know, we ask more than just choose questions here. When the trash can is alight, it makes a purple or violet flame. And this was because behind the scenes of production, they wanted something to, as a catalyst to cause the flame to start quicker. And therefore, there was a specific chemical they used for this catalyst. What chemical element is responsible for the purple or violet flame?
Oh, there's a question. Trying to think what burns purple.
I can give you a food item, which you might find this element a lot in.
Go on then.
Bananas.
Potassium.
Potassium.
Ah, because isn't sodium green? No, copper does a greeny thing. Magnesium is white.
Copper oxidizes to green, which is why I think the Statue of Liberty is a sort of greenish color.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent question, James.
Thank you.
I shall respond with a terrible question. At the start of the episode, when they're tidying up, Rebecca is carrying three boxes of what?
It's not shame.
At that very point, that is the peak of her shame. So I'll give you half a point for shame. And actually, this substance might be used to help with shame.
Oh, alcohol.
It is. Do you know what particular type?
It's going to be ironic if it's vermouth, isn't it?
It isn't vermouth. It is gin.
Oh, I was drinking gin while recording.
Ah, I thought you were going to say whilst.
You know me. Every Thursday night and drink gin and set things on fire. Oh, we've also got a letter here. It's one of the few ones which survived the fire. It's from Zencaster. If you want a fiery podcast, which is sure to spark interest, then use Zencaster. We've been using it for a few years and fully recommend it for its user interface and its inbuilt audio processing. If you want to get on board with Zencaster, then use the promo code NORM to save 30% off your first month of any Zencaster paid plan.
Thank you, James. We've come to the end of the episode. We need a drink, perhaps a flaming Sambuca?
Yeah, there is also a Fireball, the cinnamon whiskey.
Oh yeah, a Fireball. That sounds pleasant. We'll have a Fireball whiskey, and in our other hand, we'll have a cigarette each, shall we?
Ooh.
Really go naughty.
Fireball and cigarettes. What a time to be alive. No, good episode, and we'll talk to you all again next week. Thank you for listening, everyone.
Cheers.